Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. Stevie didn't get lost getting here, so he's also here as we kick things off with the early game in the Premier League. Liverpool are taking on Chelsea. This one finished 0-0. It's kind of one of those games that actually went pretty much as everyone expected. Not a lot of quality shown from either side, and it was your typical kind of mid-table battle, epitomised by the fact, of course, when you take a look at the Premier League table and where they stand after today's games, they are 8th and 10th, respectively, level on points with Brentford in between them. Oh, look who's happy to be here. Still in Germany. Stuart Robson joins us.
He loves Derek so much.
He loves Derek so much. We'll get a Robbo in a minute.
Well, it was, you know what it was like? It was like, and it's a shame really, but it was like two heavyweight boxers getting one final payday. And it's a shame because these two have been, over the years, particularly recently, have been tremendous. But it was two sides that are struggling. I mean, a positive from Chelsea perspective, the Silva again was terrific. Jorginho was excellent. And Modric was really exciting when he came on. I thought Ziyech played all right. They were trying to hit that big diagonal out to Ziyech, switchy play, balls over the top. And I thought they controlled a fair amount of it in the first half as it went on. But, yeah, Havertz had his goal chopped off and then he had a couple of opportunities that he never took. But, yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's a bit of a sad sight to see.
Stevie, after the Wolves game, you said...
When I saw the team, I thought... This looks like a bit of mix and match.
Right.
You know, as if they've kind of thrown a team together. And actually, they played as though they'd been thrown together. You know, you got Harvey Elliott, who I keep saying is learning his trade, and he's been playing in the middle of the park, now finds himself on the left-hand side of a front three. Gakpo through the middle, who's not a centre-forward. Naby Keita, I mean, 70 million, really. Bazicic actually did OK. And Thiago was Thiago. I mean, just Milner, right? I mean, it just wasn't good. It was bang average. Yeah. And if it wasn't for Alisson making that save from Bajsheel in the first half, then this could have gone way wrong. Had Liverpool lost a goal and gone behind, this could have went way wrong. So at the end of the day, I think we should just be happy and take a point if you're Liverpool, the way they played. Because there was nothing to talk about with Liverpool.
I think it tells you all, I mean, we know some of Chelsea's selection was really because of a long injury list, big injury list, to be fair to them. But when you're putting in young Bajčić again, who did play well in midweek and he's only 18. But when he's starting ahead of Fabinho and Henderson, I think it's kind of telling you where they are, that he's played these experienced players and he just isn't getting the tune out of them whatsoever.
Do you know the strange thing as well? You know when he made all the substitutes and Henderson and Fabinho come on? Normally, under normal circumstances, you'd be going, oh, he's bringing the cavalry on here to win the game. I didn't feel like that when they came on. I'm like, well, we'll probably just
going for the motion.
We won't lose the game.
Right.
I didn't get the feeling of, oh, they're making all these changes to win, to go and get after it. Because nothing changed. You know, no surprise Nunez showed a bit of life. But other than that, there was no difference.
What's wrong with them, Robbo?
Again, they're not playing with a great intensity. There's a lack of confidence. And I agree with what Craig just said. It looks as though Klopp has not given up on one or two of the players, but he's not particularly happy with one or two players. He decided to play Milner at right back rather than Alexander-Arnold. Bajčić in midfield instead of Fabinho. And Henderson could have played as well. You play Gakpo through the centre-forward position, as Stevie said. He's not a centre-forward. He likes to play off the left-hand side. He's already lost a little bit of confidence. He doesn't look the player that we saw at the World Cup. So there's a lot of things going wrong with Liverpool at the moment. And even defensively, they had one or two issues. And I thought for the first half, Chelsea controlled the game. Then Liverpool, right at the start of the second half, that's what you expect from Liverpool. Pressing the ball high up the field, winning it back, playing at a high tempo. But they couldn't maintain it. There's a lot of things wrong with Liverpool at the moment.
I think if Chelsea had somebody proper up front, that was a proper forward, and I heard it mentioned in the commentary actually, like a Didier Drogba, I mean, he's gone back a few
years. Yeah.
But if they had somebody up front with pace and power, that ball over the top would have killed Liverpool today. I mean, it almost did with Havertz on a couple of occasions, and they were looking for it. Thiago Silva was coming out and he was looking for it. And then even when they had the ball on the left, they were looking for that big switch because Andy Robertson had tucked in. So, all in all, I think bearing in mind that the last two results being Crystal Palace and this one, bearing in mind the previous results, I think he'll be pretty happy.
I think you're going to be happier, aren't you, Robbo, being a Chelsea fan than you are a Liverpool supporter at the moment?
Yes. My only problem with Potter is that when you're a coach, you have to set down the basics of what your game plan. So you go into a club and you sort of say, for 6-7 weeks, I've got to do the basics and make sure everybody knows the basics. And as we get better and as we start to play well, I'll develop the tactics. I'll start to make one or two changes. I was watching Chelsea today and they changed from a back three to a back four. They changed the midfield shape on three or four occasions. They changed everything all over the place. I think he's trying too hard at the moment, Graham Potter. He's trying to be too clever. You've got to stick to the basics when you go into a club and you're struggling at the moment. Until he gets those basics right and the way he wants to play, he can't then develop and keep changing the tactics and keep changing the personnel. I know he's got injuries, but he's got to make sure the players know exactly what he's doing. He's trying too hard at the moment to be clever.
Well, I think, in all fairness, though, I think part of that is, a huge part of that has to be, Stevie, the amount of injuries that he's got. I know all these new players have come in, the signing people for fun. I know Felix has got to serve another match suspension. But
11 injuries is...
I mean, that's a lot.
Who can deal with that?
Right. Mudrick looked fun, didn't he, when he came on?
Aye, looked sharp.
Yeah.
Could have had a couple. Bright. I mean, again...
Quick feet.
The difference between Chelsea and Liverpool, the changes they made, the players made a difference.
This was great feet, wasn't it? The finish wasn't, but watch just here how he shifts it left to right and then back on his left. Not just that, if you can cement these skills along with the pace that he's got. You know, can you imagine? I think, you know, when Potter...
He's not fit. He said he's not fit.
Potter mentioned that he's had a winter break. He's had a good few weeks. I think 10 weeks. Did he say 10 weeks? He's not done much. So he's got that to come. He's got the new country, fit in with the new teammates. But I'm looking at him today coming on. I mean, I saw him play for Ukraine against Scotland. He came off the bench 12 months or so ago and he looked super sharp that day. I remember saying to Stevie and he was saying, yeah, he does, but he does look raw.
Yeah.
But when I think if I'm looking at him thinking, I can get João Felix back in this side and get him with his pace and get Felix floating about. I've only got one more slot to fill, whether it's Havertz or somebody else. Mm. And that could be quite an exciting front line. Mm. But it just depends when old Felix is coming back, but it just depends when other injuries are coming back. But I thought he looked terrific when he came on.
I wish Potter would sort out who he wants to play in the middle of the park. I know he's got injuries. Right. You know, today, I don't think going to Anfield's a good time to play a young guy out of position in the middle of the park. He did with Hall.
Right.
And actually almost cost Chelsea. Because they nearly lost a goal, just because his body was all wrong. He's facing his own goal. He's back to he lost the ball. Liverpool could have scored. And sometimes, as the boys have been saying, if you try and be too clever, it can bite you. I think if you get settled down with all the talent you've got up front, that Craig just mentioned, if you get your middle of the park settled, and by that I mean decide who you're playing. Again, he changed it in the middle of the park today. So. Get settled and then throw all your talent on top of it and then you can start going up the table.
I don't think it's very fair on the young guys as well.
Right.
You go to Anfield, they're not playing great. He's done pretty well at left back. He's 18. He goes into the left side of the midfield and sometimes it was in the middle of the park he was floating into. It was really tight in there in the first half an hour, I mean, really tight. There wasn't a lot of space at all. Liverpool were trying to squeeze it. Chelsea were trying to play out. And as Stevie said, he's shown for the ball because he's not frightened to show for it. But then Liverpool are pressing him and they're playing balls into him. He's got his back to goal and it's tough. I mean, it can destroy a youngster's confidence. Sure. I mean, it's difficult enough at 18 coming in and playing in your preferred position. But on top of that, as I said earlier, I thought Jorginho actually played really well today and he helped him. But boy, he needs to get all those. I mean, Loftus-Cheek was on the bench. He's been over the course,
yeah.
And yet he's playing this kid in there ahead of somebody like Loftus-Cheek. I think that's telling another story.
Of course, both of these teams now, really, their goal is to finish top four come the end of the season. A big ask, considering what we've seen from them, of course, so far this campaign. Liverpool 2-1, Chelsea are 8-1. Remember, they're level on points. Liverpool do have a game in hand. Robert, I think if I was betting at the moment, I would say that Chelsea would finish higher than Liverpool.
Based on what we saw today, I think you're right. Chelsea looked the slightly better team. Liverpool looked lacking in confidence. Chelsea have got some good individual players. As we said, Potter's got to make sure he gets it all the right pieces in the right places. And I think over the course of the season, I think Chelsea will be slightly better. Liverpool are struggling at the moment. I'm not sure either of them are going to get into the top four, but at the moment, I would say on the basis of what we saw today, Chelsea have got more chance.
Well, Liverpool have got some injuries. And one or two to come back.
Right, yeah. They've got Van Dijk obviously out.
They're not going to... Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been playing well all season anyway. I mean, they were losing goals for fun when he was in the team. So, I wouldn't imagine they're going to do much business, if any, in the January transfer window again. They've obviously Gakpo. Whereas Chelsea, they could do more business. They've already done business. And I don't know the time frame on some of these players to come back. But if they come back in the next 4 to 6 weeks, he's going to have a bunch of players that could potentially put a run together. Yeah. Whereas Liverpool, it's just so flat.
Yeah.
And it's like this manager just wants this season to end and then they can figure it out in the summer where they go again.
Every which way you look, there seems to be light at the end of the tunnel for Chelsea with the players they've got coming back.
Sure.
And when you think about Liverpool with the players they've got to come back, I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. I don't see 2-1. I'm absolutely shocked at 2-1. If everybody at Liverpool was fit right now, I still wouldn't put money on them winning the next game.
Really?
You don't know what you're going to get. Regardless
well, you said
of the
Tom
opposition.
McConnell, yeah,
what about the
Wolves
game?
I was watching.
I don't know who to tell to shut up, Foss, you or him.
he's getting it from both sides.
Meanwhile, very much the opposite end of the form table at the moment, of course, are Arsenal and Manchester United, absolutely flying at the moment. They face off tomorrow at the Emirates. Arsenal, of course, looking to re-establish 8-point lead at the top of the table on Manchester City. Let's take a look at the prediction, shall we? Oh, there you go. So stay away from 2-1.
And by the way,
don't touch that.
By the way, people will think we all got in the corner.
No, we don't talk to each other outside the studio.
Because obviously we've not been to Germany to see Rob. That's slightly weird, isn't it?
That is very strange. If everyone said it was going to be a draw pretty much as well in the Liverpool-Chelsea game.
Yeah, but 2-2, we thought it was going to be goals.
Well, you went for goals.
Boy,
Robbo, Arsenal to win it.
Yes, I think so. I think their performance against Tottenham last week, you know, they could have gone into the game under a bit of pressure. I thought the Tottenham crowd might get after them, the Tottenham players might get after them. That wasn't the case. They completely dominated the game. They're showing a lot of composure now. They're playing with great speed on the counter-attack. They, in the top third of the field, they look as though they can create chances all the time. I'm just not sure how you stop Arsenal playing at the moment because they've got so many players that can twist and turn with the ball and get out of tight situations. They're clever around the box. They play little 1-2. Saka is playing in the form of his life. Martinelli's doing well down the left-hand side. Odegaard, who I didn't fancy maybe a year and a half ago, looks a top-class player. And even Nketiah, playing as the centre-forward, is doing a good job. So, at the moment, I think Arsenal are the best team in the league, and they're going to be a difficult side to beat. And I don't think Manchester United will beat them at the Emirates.
It's a Manchester United, let's not forget, without Casemiro, who's been such a key part of this great run that Ten Hag's side has been on. I think that is a big... Obviously, it's a big factor going into this.
Well, they got sloppy at Selhurst Park in the second half, and he felt he had to make a challenge, and it was a yellow card challenge. He knew as soon as he made it. But that's probably Arsenal's strongest position at the moment, is Partey, Xhaka, and Odegaard. Yeah, the front line have been great, but that midfield, Xhaka and Partey, to be fair, have given Odegaard the platform to go and play. They've been brilliant. Partey's been superb in there. And how are Man United going to combat that? Does he play Fred and McTominay? Does he change things up? Because you can't replace like for like Casemiro. He just doesn't have that player. So for those reasons, and I just think Arsenal are a bit of a train at the moment. There's no sign of them stopping. There's no sign of the pressure getting to them just yet. And I think Man United have come a long way, but Arsenal at the moment, as Robbo said, they're a better team than Man City. There's no ifs and buts.
Well, Arsenal would have been favourites going into this game, even if Casemiro was playing.
Right.
Yes. So clearly the fact he's not playing weakens Manchester United, which means Arsenal are going to be even better, in my opinion. I mean, whether it's Fred or Fred and McTominay, I mean, he might even throw in my mate Martinez. He played he played in there for Ajax. I mean, we just don't know, because he clearly doesn't fancy Fred or McTominay. So you never know. He might just try something on this occasion. But regardless of who he plays, Arsenal, no question, are favourites. And I just don't see Man United beating them.
Listen, do us a favour, though. You're not in tomorrow. If Martinez loses a header, don't phone him saying, see, I told you.
He will do. He can't help himself. I'm a speed dump when it comes to that. We've seen, of course, Trossard join Arsenal. Kiwior could be making the move as well to Arteta's side. A player that maybe not a lot of people have seen, Robert, but I know you have.
Yeah, he's a centre-half. We saw him at the World Cup. He played for Poland in the World Cup. He's played for Spezia, and he usually plays on the left-hand side of two centre-backs. He's 6'2". He's good in the air. He's decent on the ball. He's a decent athlete. You know, you wouldn't watch him and say he's an outstanding player, but at the moment, he's the sort of player that Arsenal need. The two centre-halves are playing well at the moment, but if one of them goes down, you don't want to bring Holding into the side. Kiwior is a good player, and he'll do a good job. So I think it's an excellent signing. And the same you could say with Trossard, who probably won't get in the side, but he's a great backup player. We talked about it a couple of days ago. He's a great squad player, and when one of those players isn't quite playing well enough or gets injured, he comes in and doesn't really weaken the side. Good signing for Arsenal, both of them.
Hold on. Has Todd Bowley not heard about this? Has it done yet? Todd Bowley's around.
We're doubling.
Arsenal are trying to sign somebody.
Give him 8 years. We'll be back then tomorrow to reflect on Arsenal against Manchester United, Real Madrid in action, Barcelona as well. Manchester United taking on who's playing Wolves tomorrow?
Man City
are playing Wolves tomorrow. We're looking back at that game as well. We're down to the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup, and remember, they've played over two legs. The first leg, Tuesday and Wednesday, Saints take on Newcastle, and 24 hours later, it's Forest against United, those games on ESPN+. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Antoine Griezmann was exceptional as Atleti beat Valladolid by 3-0. 2 assists and a goal for the Frenchman. An impressive win for Diego Simeone's side. It has been a poor season, hasn't it, up to now. They sit, though, fourth in the table. 3 clear of Villarreal, a Champions League place very much their goal come the end of the campaign. For more on this, let's welcome in Ali Moreno. Ali, it was the Antoine Griezmann show.
Yes, it is. And you were correct in that Atletico Madrid were very good today. In fact, I would argue that the first 30 minutes that we saw from Atletico Madrid today are the best 30 minutes that we have seen certainly this season, but that we have seen in a long, long, long time from this team. And yes, Antoine Griezmann seems to be in the middle of everything that they do offensively. The goal that you saw today from Alvaro Morata and how well Morata takes it, the position that Antoine Griezmann takes is the same position that he took against Almeria last weekend. And he does exactly the same thing. Gets in between lines, the ball is played into him, center back gets thrown out of position, and then a runner goes in behind. Last week it was Angel Correa, this week is Morata. But you just see in a player like Antoine Griezmann, the level of confidence extremely high among teammates that haven't really been playing all that well. So he's lifted his level, and today everybody lifted their level, including Diego Simeone, who we have criticized because, of course, he refuses to take the parking brake off of this team. Well, today it was a 4-3-3, and then the guys that were playing in front of the back line, yeah, Koke sat in front of the back line, but then after that, Thomas Lemar is getting forward, Marcos Llorente is getting forward, Angel Correa on the right-hand side, Griezmann with freedom, and Morata scoring goals. It was a beautiful game to watch if you're an Atletico Madrid fan.
It was all Joao Felix's fault in the end, Ali. That was the issue.
Yep.
Well, of course, people will have you believe that that's indeed what was holding this team back. But what's holding this team back, we all know, and we have talked about it many and many times, and it is the name of Diego Simeone. And I have to be very careful when I talk about Diego Simeone, because he's also the name that has pushed this team forward. But given the personnel that he has currently available on this team, he's just got to let him go. He's got to let him play and then know that you're not going to be as good defensively as you once were. But even if you sit back, this team doesn't have that personality and doesn't have those players. So you might as well go and attack people. You might as well just take your line of confrontation higher, and then you give yourself an opportunity to score goals. That's what they did today. It was a really, really good game for Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, impressive stuff from Simeone's side. Meanwhile, very much at the other end of the table, Sevilla coming into this clash against Cadiz, fighting relegation. And it looked like this was going to be 0-0, but... but a late chance here, handball called. You can see the reaction from the home players. Obviously, VAR would take a look.
Oh,
we play handball.
Little swat with it.
Yeah.
Oh, swats it with
yes.
the left hand.
Yeah. We've seen some dodgy ones given, haven't we, in Spain? But this one,
no, it's penalty kick.
Spot on. Penalty awarded. Rakitic.
Oh, I tell you what, they needed that as well, didn't
they? Most certainly did, Stevie. Sevilla then with a 1-0 win. Let's see what that win means for Sevilla. Huge 3 points. It lifts them out of the relegation zone, but it's so extraordinarily tight down there, obviously, with the exception of Elche. Ali, this could have been so much worse, couldn't it, for Sevilla? How key that late penalty was to Rakitic.
It's a stress relief. It's a desperation time for Sevilla. It felt like it was going to be one of those games again where they create some chances, they have opportunities. Jeremias Conan Ledesma, the goalkeeper for Cadiz, is coming up with save here, save there, balls bouncing everywhere except into the goal. They get a goal called off for an offside in the first half, and you're thinking, I don't know if this is happening for Sevilla, because it is so very much what has been happening with them throughout the course of the season. And you can sense it in Sanchez-Pizjuan in the setting. You can feel the tension. At the beginning of the game, it was all support. Here we go. Let's go get this, guys. And as the game went on, it was desperation, that nervous energy. And you can't help but think that the players are feeling it as well. The other thing that I would say, you bring in Jorge Sampaoli to give this team a push in a moment in which perhaps you need calmness, because everybody else is freaking out. And if you want a guy to be calm in this sort of environment, it is not Jorge Sampaoli. In fact, he got himself thrown out of the game today. So the struggles for Sevilla perhaps will continue. But this is, at the very least, 3 points that allows you to breathe, to take a breath and kind of set up the next week and hope that then you can get in a string of results. Sevilla, though, in the attacking half, they continue to struggle. While they may create opportunities, they just don't seem to have anybody to put in the back of the net.
And boys, we discussed this on yesterday's show. I want to get your opinion on it. So obviously, Real Madrid came from behind to beat Villarreal on Thursday in the Copa del Rey. Tchouaméni is injured at the moment. He was filmed at the NBA match that was taking place at the same time as the game, so obviously didn't watch the game, and he was criticised as a result. He's come out and issued this statement: I apologise to my club, the coaching staff, my teammates and the Madridista fans for my presence at an event at the same time that we had a lot to play for in the Copa. I've been monitoring at all times what was happening in Villarreal, but I haven't done the right thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, been watching Gareth, has he?
Is he right to be criticised?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. You're injured. Your teammates are playing. The game wasn't at home, though, was it?
No. It was at Villarreal.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to make good decisions, haven't you?
Really? I'm surprised. I didn't think it would be that big a deal.
I didn't realise the game was at Villarreal.
Yeah, he was in Paris for the NBA match.
Yeah, I've got a different opinion on it then. I thought the game was actually at home.
Right.
But I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
He can take the game. He can still watch the game.
Yeah.
You don't have to be locked up in the house to have to watch the game. So, no, I don't have a problem with it.
I mean, unless you're bothered about the travelling, people...
Yeah.
..flicking between countries, and when you're injured, you should... You know, should you be seen to be travelling...
Is it the image, isn't it? How committed are you to our club that pays you so much money that you're not willing to watch a big game like this live, that you'd prefer to be somewhere else?
I mean, had this been at the Bernabeu,
yes,
then it's a whole different
ball.
Really?
However,
yeah.
There is still a, like, well, we are playing and you're away doing whatever. I mean,
I mean, if you're Angelotti, right, what are you going to say to the guy? You're not going to fine him or suspend him. You're just going to go, look, it's probably better if you keep your head down.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I don't have that big a problem with it. But just keep your nose clean. That's it.
Ali, we heard from you yesterday, of course. Do you think this statement now will put the end to it all?
I would make the argument that the statement could have been better from Tchouaméni. Don't tell me that you're looking at scoring updates and that's enough, and therefore you're clear from any blame. That doesn't quite put it all right to me. I would say that there's a very simple solution to this. You go to Carlo Ancelotti, who is indeed your boss, your direct boss, and say, hey, look, I'm going to get my rehab done. And he said, okay, if once I get my rehab done, I can go and watch this game in Paris. I'll be back for tomorrow's rehab. Do you have an issue with this? And if Carlo Ancelotti says, no, don't worry, go ahead, then so be it. But obviously he didn't get this clear by the team. And I do think that there is a perception issue with Tchouaméni and with any player that does this. Your team is playing. Your team has been struggling, which I think is important here in the context of the conversation. Real Madrid have been struggling. The last thing you want to do is be away somewhere else, be seen somewhere else, while your team is having to come back against Villarreal. Imagine if Villarreal actually had held on against Real Madrid and they had lost that match. This would have become an even bigger story because, oh, we've been struggling, you're injured, you're over there watching the basketball game, while our team's still struggling, while our team's still losing. The perception of it, I don't think, sends the right message for Tchouaméni.
I think one of the problems for particularly a young player, but I know you don't think it's a problem, but
I don't.
I think
I don't understand them. You're making them.
No, but Stevie,
them mountain
no, but Stevie, but Stevie, the and just using Gareth Bale as an analogy, the antagonistic side of him is still, and it was at the end, right? Very antagonistic, and the fans were taking the bait, and the headlines were negative, and that's fresh in those supporters' minds, and we know how hostile it can be, and those fans can be, as Ali said, when performances are not good. And for any young player, you don't want to give, what has it been about, 80,000, 90,000?
Yes.
Fans who are going to turn on you as a youngster. I'm not saying that will happen, but if you give them enough rope, that could happen. It's difficult enough getting into these big clubs. and making a name for yourself, you don't want to make the fans turn on you, because you want to drain the confidence and they turn on you. You just, good decisions, that's all I'm saying.
Tchouaméni won't be available, of course, still nursing that injury for the game tomorrow, which is live on ESPN+. Part of a doubleheader for you, Barca taking on Getafe, followed by that game, the new Mat San Mamés Athletic Club taking on Real Madrid. Those games live on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
68 days without Bundesliga football to entertain us. But the Winterpause is over. We have a top spiel to kick things off. RB Leipzig versus Bayern München. How we missed it. Option to the middle. Schipper will take us one of them. And that's what he was doing before the World Cup break.
Absolutely brilliant from Gnabry. Schipper Moting wanted it badly. He got on the end of it.
It's a bit slack from Bayern. Forsberg. Trying to find André Silva. Looking for the angle. Is it going to be? It is! It's scrambled over the line! Marcel Halstenberg wheels away! It wasn't pretty, it was gritty from Leipzig. The charge could be on someone's line, and Upamecano with a challenge, he knew what he was doing. It's yellow, the Leipzig players are furious.
I think yellow card is the right decision, but it's a close one.
And Bayern trying to win this near the end, and it wasn't so very far away. Thomas Müller. Goodness me, it is finished. Leipzig 1, Bayern 1.
Bayern didn't exactly set the world on fire, did they, as they returned to action against Leipzig. And, of course, looking ahead to the next round of the Champions League, where they face PSG. They are favourites to advance. Robbo's back in the cold. Gab joins us in the warmth of his house. Robbo, let's start with you. As it stands, Bayern favourites to beat PSG?
Well, not on the evidence of yesterday. They didn't get any sort of fluency in their play. I thought the two centre-halves at times were too eager to try and win the ball. They were left two-on-two at times. And De Ligt looked a bit edgy. So did Upamecano, as we saw with that foul that you just played there. And they didn't have any fluency in midfield. Kimmich is usually a top-class player. He didn't run the game. He got better, actually, after he made the mistake for the goal. But he didn't really run the game. Goretzka was ineffective as well. The front line, I thought Gnabry played well down the left-hand side, and just when he was playing well down the left-hand side, they put him to the right-hand side. Choupo-Moting is the centre-forward who didn't really get involved in much of the play but scored his goal. There was a lot of players waving their arms about, arguing with each other. They didn't play with the fluency, and I thought at times Leipzig put them off their rhythm. So not great from Bayern Munich at the moment, and I've seen that quite often after a Christmas break. Bayern don't always play well for the first 2 or 3 weeks. They'll need to play much better against PSG.
Is that just where are can we judging them after just one game after a long winter break?
I think it's far from the best Bayern Munich side anyway. But I think there is obviously something in the cobwebs of a winter break. Obviously Jan Sommer's come in to replace Manuel Neuer, not a big drama, experienced goalkeeper. What I thought as the second half wore on, because Leipzig didn't offer a great deal in the first half at all, but as they pushed forward in the second half, that back line looks a little flimsy. And I don't know how fit he is, but De Ligt, to me, just is cumbersome. And that's maybe nice. I mean, if you get him one-on-one, Upamecano looks a little bit cumbersome, but I think he's quicker. I just don't think De Ligt is quick at all. And I think that could be exploited in behind. So, yeah, I mean, we know Bayern can produce performances. that's why they're favourites against PSG. But I don't think it's a Bayern side you look at and go, I'm frightened to play them.
I mean, it looks pretty good on paper, but we shouldn't underestimate the difference between coming off a break and being in the middle of the season and playing and being fluent.
Right.
I mean, that was a big thing that Rob was talking about. There was no fluency. And that smacks of not playing.
So will that come? Is that just a case of time?
Yeah, but unfortunately, they don't have time. This game against PSG is coming up pretty quick, so they don't have time.
Yeah.
You know? When you play practice games and you do all kinds of training, when you step into a proper game, everyone has to be quicker and more accurate. And so don't be surprised that things are not as quick and they're certainly not as accurate.
But they're not. To be fair to them, they didn't play one of the weaker teams in the Bundesliga.
Sure.
Leipzig are supposed to be the nearest challengers this year. That's what they were saying. That's what Derek was saying that in the commentary yesterday. And they're away from home. So, I mean, I think we can cut them some slack in that respect, but it wasn't a brilliant performance.
Mane, of course, very much questionable, certainly for the first leg. Gab, are we being too harsh on Bayern?
I think so. I mean, as you guys were talking, I was sort of thinking to myself sort of around Europe and say, like, you know, which of the big clubs has played consistently well and has looked impressive since the end of the World Cup? And, you know, other than Arsenal, who obviously won't be winning the Champions League this year, or indeed Barcelona, I couldn't think of too many others. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Paris Saint-Germain certainly have blown hot and cold a lot, in fact, more cold than hot, since the World Cup. Probably not a mystery when you've got all these guys going away. I think Stevie made a good point. How will this break impact them? What we've seen in the past is they do a lot of physical work to kind of top up their fitness, and it takes them a while to find their rhythm after the break. But, you know, by the time these two teams play each other, it could be a different story.
You're in Dortmund, of course, Robbo, ahead of their clash against Augsburg. You'll be calling that live on ESPN+. Just give us a little bit of preview going into that game.
Well, first of all, I'll correct you. I'm in Cologne at the moment, ready to go to Dortmund tomorrow morning. So, I'm looking forward
Why
to the Dortmund game.
Why are you in Dortmund game. Tonight? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Because Derek loves Cologne. That right, Robbo?
Yeah, and that's his hometown. That's Derek's hometown. He takes us here, there and everywhere. He knows everybody in Cologne. My German is absolutely brilliant, as you can imagine now.
So what's the geography?
Looking forward
How far
to tomorrow's
is it to
game.
Dortmund?
Apparently it's about an hour and a quarter drive, and it's not that far. And then we come back here in the evening to have a nice meal before we come home. So I'll try again, Dan. I'll try again. When we go to Dortmund tomorrow, it's going to be a good game. Sebastian Haller could be the story.
Yes.
You know, obviously went to
brilliant.
Dortmund, had testicular cancer. He has had radiotherapy or chemotherapy. He's now back in the squad. He scored a hat-trick against Basel in a friendly a little while ago, so that would be a great story. Everybody's, of course, looking at Jude Bellingham as well. He was excellent at the World Cup. Can he continue that sort of form? Lots of clubs looking at him. And Moukoko, who's just signed a big contract at Borussia Dortmund, and they thought he might go, but he's going to be the centre-forward. He's a young player that's got a good goal record, an outstanding player. And if those three players, and Sebastian Haller might come on as a sub, if those three players play to the best of their ability, they should be too much for Augsburg, who right near the bottom of the table at the moment.
At least that hour and a quarter driving the car will give you a chance, Robbo, to up your game in the pronunciation stakes.
Absolutely. I think a name we can all pronounce is Gio Reyna. Of course, this is first game since the whole soap opera exploded over here in the States, Robbo. How much is he expected to feature?
I'm not sure he's going to feature. That, you know, we looked at the possible lineups. He's fit to play. They're talking about him maybe playing on the right-hand side. There's some other choices as well. Depends whether Marco Reus is fit, and there's a question mark over him. But if Reina plays, he'll play on the right-hand side. And, of course, as you just mentioned, he's a player that is under the scrutiny at the moment because he had all that problems at the World Cup. He didn't play particularly well just before the World Cup for Borussia Dortmund. He obviously didn't play that much in the World Cup. His mum and parents have all got involved. It's going to be a testing time for a young player to get himself back on track and show the quality that he's got, because he's undoubtedly a top-class player.
Stuart Robson, thank you very much. Meanwhile, in Italy, Napoli extending their lead at the top of the table after a 2-0 victory. They are flying at the moment, very much favourites, aren't they, to win their first title since 1990. But the big story this week has, of course, been about the side that now sit 10th in the table after that 15-point deduction handed to Juve. Juve stung, said the front page of Gazzetta. Juventus flattened, meanwhile, Corriere dello Sport. Right, Gab, I know this is going to be difficult. Pretend I'm an idiot. Explain to me what Juventus have done wrong.
We don't have to pretend.
All right, so I can tell you what Juventus were found guilty of. I will have an explainer up, or it might already be up on the site if you want to get more granular. But essentially, it has to do with amortization and the way the way clubs account for it when they buy and sell players. Basically, if you sell a player for $10 million, you book a $10 million profit straight away. If you buy a player for $10 million, you only take a $2 million hit, and say that $10 million player signs a five-year contract, you only take a $2 million hit in that first season. So, Dan, if you or I were to, let's say I sold you a pencil for $10 million, and you sold me a pen for $10 million, and we gave Mr. Pen and Mr. Pencil, we both gave them five-year contracts, on paper, from an accounting point of view, we would be making an $8 million profit. Reason being that $10 million coming in because I've sold you the pen, but then I can spread out the cost of the purchase of your pencil for over five seasons. All of that is fine and it's legal. The accusation against Juventus is that they inflated the values. They went to other clubs and they said, "Hey, this pen, it's only worth $1 million. Let's pretend it's worth $10 million, and that way, because that would really, really help us out in making our books look better. Essentially, it's a form of cooking the books. Now, obviously, you might be asking, well, then why weren't other clubs punished? And in the view of the prosecutor, with Juventus, this was really a systemic thing. Remember, their offices were raided, there were wiretaps, and essentially, you know, they talk about this quite openly, like, you know, we're not really supposed to be doing this, but in reality, if we get away with it, blah, blah, blah. That's the accusation. Now, Juventus are going to say this was an appeal trial, remember? Well, first time around, you found us innocent. What's actually changed? Second, with wiretaps, they're prone to different sorts of interpretation. But obviously, it's also a feeling, why are we being targeted? So it remains to be seen whether the stands, they do have another appeal coming up.
So what's the likelihood that maybe these 15 points could be reinstated, Gab?
It's really difficult to answer that until we see the actual written reasons from the judges that accompanied this verdict, Dan. Interesting thing is about this next level of appeal, and this may be Juventus's best bet at this stage. They can't get into the merits of the judgment. They can simply either uphold the judgment or they can strike it off if they think there was some irregularity or there was some sort of technical issue with it. And like I said, one of those things might be, well, this is not a crime. You know, you may see it as false accounting, but we can go and have a debate about that. It's not cut and dried. So there's a range of things I think Juve can lean on, but certainly right now, morale is way down because remember, they don't just have this sporting case, there's also a criminal case involved here because they're being investigated for false accounting and they are listed on the stock exchange. They have a duty to report things accurately to shareholders. And of course, another branch of that sort of false accounting trial potentially, which could also turn into a sporting trial, is this business when they all took pay cuts under COVID, announced the pay cuts, and then, as it has emerged, according to investigators, those weren't real pay cuts. Were actually only they were going to get a fair chunk of that money back through bonuses and other mechanisms. And of course, on top of that, Craig's favorite three letters, FFP, because they've been found guilty here, UEFA are also investigating them.
Wow.
Because if it's false accounting, then the question is, did you have the numbers you needed to play in the Champions League all these years?
Wow.
So,
anything to add, Stephen?
One of the things I was going to ask you, Gab, and it's slightly going away from Juventus, but it's this story. What does this mean for Paratici at Tottenham, if anything, and how will that affect Antonio Conte, if at all?
Yeah, so obviously as part of this judgment, a whole bunch of Juventus officials were banned, including the former president. Feels weird saying that after so many years. Andrea Agnelli, of course, was forced to resign in November. He's been banned for 2 years. Fabio Paratici has been banned for 2.5 years. Now, there's two elements to this. One is, obviously, he's got this appeal coming up together with Juventus. And remember, Juventus can also take the case to CAS, to the Court of Arbitration for Sport as well, before the ban becomes definitive. And the other element is, will this ban be extended worldwide? Prosecutors have asked FIFA to extend it to a worldwide ban, which is possible. It wouldn't be unprecedented. So that's going to impact whether he can continue. And then also, I think, Spurs are going to weigh up sort of some of the negative publicity that comes from this, what it means for him. In terms of what it means for Antonio Conte, you know, the guys worked together before for 3 years at Juventus, won 3 league titles, and Conte still walked out. There's no question that Paratici has a ton of respect for Conte. Maybe it's mutual, but, you know, they're not blood relatives. So I don't think Conte's decision is going to necessarily depend on the future of Fabio Paratici. If Conte wants to move on at the end of the season, he's going to move on, I think, with or without Paratici.
Good stuff, Gav. As Gav mentioned, of course, be sure to check out his article over on the website. Plus, check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast that drops on Monday. Don't forget to check that out.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It is, of course, a World Cup year for the women. Their preparations going well as they thrashed New Zealand by 5-0 on Friday. A lot more reaction to that and more developing news regarding the US men's game as well on the latest edition of Football Americas. You can check that out on ESPN Plus. A new episode drops on Monday. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for watching. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Gab back with us, as well as the boys, to answer your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig and Stevie with us here in the studio. Gab, how are you feeling about tonight? You nervous?
I am a little bit nervous, but you know what? It's one of those things where you tell yourself nervous because you don't want to take it for granted. Logic says we should win. We've got, 21 of 22 starters available. We've already beaten them twice. They're really not that good. But then, you know, you don't want to look like a fool if they upset you. Oh. My main thing is I want to make sure Nick Sirianni and the players aren't underestimating them.
Oh, Eagles against the Giants, of course, tonight in the playoffs. Meanwhile, back to soccer. Is it hard to stay focused while playing in a game you know is very boring? Have you played in many boring games?
Well, a game's boring if you're 4-0 up.
Well, not really, because that's not your thinking at the time.
Right.
You try to do your best at all time.
Okay.
So you're not thinking about it that way?
I think maybe pre-season friendlies, I know it's slightly different.
Oh, they're horrible. They're right. Awful. The worst games are the first couple, because you play teams that are in the second league. Like, for example, we used to go to Sweden and Norway. We used to go all over Scandinavia and play like second division teams.
Right.
Or even first division teams.
So they're up for it.
And they're up for it, and we're just starting off. We've hardly kicked a ball, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and you're getting beat, and you're thinking, how are we going to win the title? We can't even beat this one. I mean, you're like, you feel as though you're never going to be able to run again.
Yeah.
Because you can't catch anybody. People are running past you. You can't pass it straight. It's like, oh, I just wish the final was so good we get away from here.
Shaka would have fallen asleep for sure at Anfield today.
Well, I mean, he could fall asleep in a bed of nails, can't he? But for the players on the field, it wasn't boring.
Right. You don't have that sense.
Well,
this is boring.
Oh, well, they can't score, and we can't score. Ref, can't we just stop the game now? Sort of thing.
No. Friendlies? What were you like?
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah,
awful.
Incredibly bored than friendlies.
Awful. Yeah.
The pre-season's different.
The worst friendlies as well were internationals.
Oh yeah, you love
when, you know, when both when you got both teams.
Yes.
When the players don't, I know, but they're not interested.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
Gab, have you ever fallen asleep covering a game?
I have not fallen asleep actually at the stadium. I have seen colleagues fall asleep.
Jack of his life.
In fact, I remember this happening in the press box at here in London at West Ham, which is, and then this is at the Boleyn ground, so this is at the old ground, which is actually, you know, it's a pretty noisy place, pretty noisy fans. And I don't know if this particular gentleman, who I won't name, I don't know if he'd had a drink before it was or in the afternoon, but he was very obviously snoring. And eventually somebody woke him up, because we didn't want to get in trouble with his boss. But I think there were enough people. I think this might have been just before camera phones were ubiquitous. But yeah, he would have been in serious trouble.
I fell asleep at a press conference once, waiting for the player to come.
Really?
Yeah, that was back in the... That
been
was
night out, though, right?
In the,
what, who woke you up, the cameraman?
No, another journalist there woke me up. But it took a while.
You know when you see like the House of Commons in England?
Yes, yeah.
And all these politicians?
Yeah, they're all asleep.
Yeah. Half of them are.
What about when you sit on the bench? Has it ever been... I suppose you guys didn't spend too much time on a bench, but have you known players to have a little... Julien Faubert famously did it at Real Madrid when he was there.
Who? Fell asleep?
Yeah, fell asleep on the bench.
No, you're too busy with a carry-on the bench.
Right.
Unless it's a cup final or something. But generally, when you're on the bench...
You're just messing around.
You're messing about. And I mean, you're watching a game, but you're not particularly... You just sat there.
Right.
And if something somebody gets megged...
Yeah.
Then you're all like, I'm just what about that?
Plus the fact, like, if somebody gets injured in the first 10 minutes, you're like, get up!
Right. Yes. Oh, no.
Get up! You're looking at the clock going, oh, God, I don't want to come on now.
Are you getting battered and you see the gaffer looking down the line and you're all sitting like this, leaning back so he doesn't see you?
What you brought on, was it 4-0, 5-0?
That was Blackburn, yeah.
Right.
3-0 after 20 minutes.
Brilliant.
And David Plate went like that and we all went like that. Oh, dear.
I told you I made my debut at Forest.
Yeah,
at Nottingham Forest when we were 5-0 down. We got beat 7. The first thing I did when I came on, I had to go in the wall and face a Stuart Pearce free kick.
Oh.
And he was taking big run-ups in those days.
Right, yeah.
You know, with that angry look about him?
Yes.
And you thought, well, he's not going to swear for this one.
Yes.
He's gone for power. So there's 5-6 of us in the wall. What percent? What's a done percent?
Yeah, done percent, yeah, exactly.
I mean, 5-0, Bobby Campbell, he's no longer with us. Bobby. Craig, get change, you're going on, son. Well, cheers, Gaffer.
Right, nice. There you are.
That's a way to make your debut, isn't it?
Stevie, in the game against Chelsea, which of Chelsea's forwards you felt was the most dangerous? Ziyech and Mudrik seemed good despite not scoring.
Oh, Mudrik. If you talk about the time he was on the field to what he did,
yes.
No question, he was exciting.
And I imagine someone like that, can that just lift everything?
Absolutely.
Like within the team, the dressing room, obviously the crowd as well.
Get him the ball.
Right.
You know, and the fact he's up against James Milner. So the guy's known for being extra pacey. And you see what he does. First time he got the ball, he's positive and he goes after him. So you just go straight away. Oi, get him the ball.
Right.
Absolutely. Get him the ball.
Seems like many Chelsea players are slipping on the turf today, but none of the Liverpool players. Is that anything to do with home advantage? Does Anfield have an extra slippery element?
Well, here's one for you, by the way.
Okay.
So you played the era after me. So the pitches we played on were heavier.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, and you had longer studs as a result.
Right. And I noticed when I went back and played, like 2006, couldn't believe how hard the ground was.
Right.
And it wasn't, it was the middle of summer. Just the way the fields are now.
Global warming, Stephen.
Yeah. So, I forgot what I was going to ask you though. Like, well, I just forgot what we're talking about.
But in all fairness...
I just forgot what we're talking about.
You lose your train of thought. Are you lost again?
We're talking about slipping over...
Aye.
...and fielding advantage.
So because it's so hard, there was a lot of the players on that day were sliding all over the place.
OK.
Because it just came as such a shock.
Right.
To be on such a hard surface that any sort of slide, off you went.
Right.
And there wasn't a lot of... I mean, the grass was like that. Whereas, as I said before, it was way thicker and softer.
Did you have problems keeping your footing at other pitches when compared to,
really,
Stamford Bridge?
No, I mean...
You were playing 2006, weren't you?
No.
No?
I finished in 2003, right, or four.
So
you played at 2006, yeah. I'd like to have seen that.
So had the...
No, well, a lot of the pitches were...
Well, because you would see both.
Yeah,
you would see both sides of it.
They're not as good as they are now,
right,
but they were better. Apart from Selhurst Park, where Wimbledon and Crystal Palace were playing as a ground share, and I remember playing 2 years in a row in FA Cup quarter-finals down there, and I honestly kid you not, there was barely a blade of grass on the field.
Yeah.
But in going to Old Trafford, it wasn't bad. I would describe it as a hybrid. It was partly in between the 80s and where we are now. It was half decent.
You didn't fall over at one place more than another?
No.
Just the lounge afterwards. Oh. Is Lampard the easy scapegoat, Gav, for all the problems with Everton? Is there more of a systemic problem... they spelled it wrong. ..with the overall structure of the club, starting with the owner?
Wait, which owner are you talking about? Moshiri or the guy who sues you if you say he's the real owner?
I'm not getting involved, Gav.
Surely it's the directors of football at Everton's problem.
Oh.
Well, you can't... You can look at Moshiri and blame him for this and that, but at the end of the day, he's put a lot of money in. So the problem is with the directors of football.
He's put money in.
Well, let's be honest.
He's put his money into the club.
Whoever's money is, they've spent a lot of money on players. And I'm sure Moshiri wasn't picking the players.
Right.
So the mistake has been on whoever the director of football's been because of the money they've spent on people like Iwobi, for example.
No. And they've been through three of them, is what I'm saying. So obviously there's an issue in terms of either bringing in directors of football can't work with managers, or managers can't work with directors of football, or making the wrong appointments. You know, buck stops with the people who make the decisions, and that is the owner. That is Bill Kenwright, who seems to hang around in perpetuity for 18 years simply because he loves the club. By the way, 18 years in which, you know, the club's, you know, certainly for most of that time kind of gone into a vertical decline. I think it's really difficult. I know it's a boring answer to say lots of different people are to blame, but it's clearly dysfunctional in so many ways, and it's been like this for a very long time. And I feel for Everton because when I was growing up, they were a legitimate big club, and you speak to fans who are new to the Premier League, or who become Premier League fans in the last 15, 20 years, and they have no idea of Everton's history. They have no idea what Everton were in the 1980s when they were challenging your team, Stevie. They think of Everton as sort of, oh, look, it's the Scouse version of Crystal Palace. Well, with all due respect to Crystal Palace, they're really not.
I think Lampard's just made a really bad decision, hasn't he, in terms of his managerial career, going in there. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting he's the becoming of Klopp or Guardiola, not at all. But when you try to rebuild your stock, as he was, you've got to pick... It's a bit like David Moyes in a way. When he got a United job, he couldn't turn it down. And then he was jumping in everything.
Mm.
You know, Real Sociedad, Sunderland, which was a cesspit at the time. And these guys, it's almost like they can't help themselves. They want to get back in. And that's understandable. But sometimes you've got to be careful. This has been a sinking ship for a long time. Yeah. It's so toxic now, you've got to question how long the ownership can continue, but I suppose people that make a lot of money in business have got a cynical side, have got a tolerant side, and have got an egotistical side. They might just try and see this one out.
Yeah.
But it's a bad scenario all round.
As far as being the scapegoat, though, unfortunately for Frank and any other manager, right now, the position they find themselves in, they need a quick fix.
You can't sack all the players.
So changing the owner is going to take time. You can't get rid of all the players. But the only logical thing to do is hope that if you bring in a new manager, there will be such a kick, the new manager kick, that he can somehow pick up points to stay in the league. It's just the way it is.
It's a double-edged sword because it is, as I mentioned, toxic, and we've seen problems outside the stadium that have been beyond what protesting should be, to be honest with you. But as Stevie said, if they are of the mindset because of the atmosphere to sell the club, they're going to sell it for a damn sight less if they're in the Championship than they are if they're in the Premier League. Mm. Well, and so, I would imagine, maybe not, I don't know, but I would think so. It's less value. It's got less value in the Championship. So you need to bring somebody in to try and keep them up, because it doesn't look as if Lampard can. And that's just more short-term plasters over the band-aid, over the cut. But what do you do? Do you sink down to the Championship?
Yeah. You know what you do?
Bring
in Don. Because Don thinks if they go down, they can just come straight back
up. Don. What do you think has been the key factor, Stephen, in Newcastle's defence, keeping so many clean sheets and being resolute?
Do you know what? If you watch Newcastle, they do something that not a lot of teams in the Premier League do. If they're under pressure, they kick it.
Right.
I mean, obviously, when teams are going at them, they defend well. But I don't remember, since the start of the season, Newcastle putting themselves under pressure by trying to overplay the ball out from the back. I just don't remember it. And I think, the other team that does it well, Arsenal. If you watch Arsenal's defence, they will kick it. They're not scared to kick it. So...
But they've got four solid defenders in there.
Yeah, and Pope, Pope today was superb.
You know, Botman's a very good centre-half. So Shah's a good player. Trippier's a 7 or 8 out of 10 every week.
Yeah.
And as you said, that saved Pope only really had one thing to do today. Yep. And it was, I actually think he's England's best goalkeeper. But obviously Pickford's the number one. But yeah, that's a solid back line.
Gab, what is ailing last season's top scorers, Salah and Son? How can they both struggle so much with form that they can't buy a goal for their teams anymore? Or is it just a function of how Liverpool and Spurs are playing?
I mean, it's obviously primarily going to be a function of that. I think it's interesting because, you know, Salah didn't go to the World Cup, right? So you figure he should be rested. And it's almost, Son did go to the World Cup, didn't stick around there that long. But what I find really interesting is the pieces around Son are the same as last season. The pieces around Salah have changed substantially. You know, Liverpool's front three, obviously, not just the injuries, but Darwin Nunez coming in and whatnot. And now Cody. So there's obviously different reasons, I think, at play there. I don't have an easy answer. And, you know what, I'll tell you what, if Conte and Klopp don't have the answer, I'm not going to have one here. But it is an odd one. I think Son especially has really, really been far below his level the last 2-3 months.
I mean, I think some people just automatically think that because somebody's had a great year or a couple of years, that the next one's going to be the same.
Right. I suppose so, because Salah has been so consistent since that move to Liverpool, that he's kind of set that bar high and that expectation at that level.
Yep. Well, I'll throw it in there as well. I'm not suggesting it's the reason, but I'll throw it in. When Mane left, just before he left, he did get his new deal, his big money. I don't know. Maybe subconsciously I don't think so, but I mean, it's not easy unless you're Messi and Ronaldo over the years to post those kind of seasons every year.
For Gab, start bench drop, Vlahovic, Tammy Abraham, or Osimhen?
No, there's no question. You start Osimhen. Of the other two, I mean, in terms of all-around package, I would take Vlahovic, but you know, based on recent form and having watched Tammy's had a very poor first half of the season, but he's really picked it up in the last couple of games. Great partnership with Dybala in the last few outings. I might bench Tammy and drop Vlahovic for now.
Final question. A lot of people have been expressing this sort of view, Gab. Does the Gab and Jules Show need to be renamed the Gab or Jules Show, as one or another is always missing? There's a lot of holidays that go on between you two, Gab.
So, a couple of things here, okay? Jules and I are working journalists. We travel, we report on stories. We can't.
Jules is at the NBA. That's what he's doing at the NBA.
He was hanging out with Aurélien Tchouaméni. Yeah. He was with Tchouaméni. Yeah, he was reporting on Real Madrid and on France.
Yeah, exactly. Tchouaméni has to apologise. Jules should apologise as well for not listening to the Gab and Jules podcast live with Don.
I think Gab should be taken off. I think he should be taken off for a bit and sat in the naughty chair.
Oh, so he should be taken away from the big chair
just
duties.
Purely for taking his family to the Antarctic. On that alone, Gab, what are you thinking about?
Am I not entitled to a holiday after the World Cup?
Yes, but not. Why did you go? You went to Siberia.
No, not Siberia. Antarctica. It's the opposite end of the globe.
There you are. Beautiful. Would you like to go to Antarctica, Stevie?
No, I'm good, thanks.
I'd like to see you get lost there.
What?
Well, don't phone me if you go there. Don't phone me if you go there. I'm not coming.
I just follow the North Star.
There you go. Beautiful high-vis jacket. High-vis. In the snow.
Well, what's going to attack him
over there? Make sure the polar bears can see me.
In Avon, in the woods, he's going to get a bow and arrow. He's got to avoid that. Yeah. High-vis.
Yeah.
In Avon.
Yeah.
What's going to attack... What's the...
Polar bears.
Polar bears.
Polar bears. Oh, they don't like high-vis jackets.
No,
there's no polar bears in Antarctica.
Oh, so
and there's no woods either.
Which animal should Stevie be concerned of then if he gets lost?
What's liable to eat me?
I would be. No, Stevie, I'd be concerned by penguins, whose droppings, incidentally, smell extremely foul.
Well, you're obsessed about penguin droppings, Gab. You keep going on. But
I fancy my chances against
penguins,
a penguin.
What are they
going
to do to you?
What is he going to do?
There's a whole colony of penguins. There's hundreds of them. It's not just you against one penguin. It's like the birds, Hitchcock. You've seen that.
Right? Are they going to gang up with it?
Come on!
Hey, lads. Hey,
pull in a jacket.
It's a lot.
Right, lads.
Where are we going on holiday, Dad? We're going to smell penguin poop in Antarctica. What's it?
By the way, is there any sort of poop doesn't smell foul?
That's today's question. Yeah. We'll leave you with that. Good luck to the Eagles tonight, Gab. We'll be back tomorrow to reflect on Arsenal against the United, Real Madrid, Barcelona in action as well. Be sure to join us.